Here is a spark of Jesus' light. It will help to keep us warm and bright. My name is Belle Michelson, and I've been invited to talk to you about children's ministry today. I didn't want to just talk to you about children's ministry. I wanted to show you some of the ways that I approach children's ministry. And I always love to start by making it beautiful and bringing in found objects from the natural world, from the created world that point us to God. A lot of these things are things that my own children have brought in for our own worship area at home. And I always love it when our children's ministry connects with the larger church tradition. And so when my own tradition is the Anglicanism, and we always begin our time together by saying, "The Lord be with you." And so if that's not your tradition, the response is, "And also with you," I invite you to join me. "The Lord be with you." I find that when we connect what we do with the children with what's happening in the larger church, then the larger church isn't so foreign to them because we're all a part of the same church. So I'm always trying to bring our denominational story into what is happening with the children. I had never really been interested in children's ministry. I didn't grow up in the church, had a thoroughly pagan upbringing, and became a Christian in my university days. And then when I got to church, I'd had this rich and wonderful and joyful experience of church life. And when I started bringing my own children to church, I had a very clear idea what I wanted for them, something that was joyful and beautiful and drew me deeply into God's story. And that was unfortunately not what I found. And so I, with a community of other parents, we said, we need to do something. We need to think proactively. I guess we were doing a fresh expression. At least that's what we were looking for. We wanted to find a way to invite our children into this transforming story in a way that would mean something and to shape and ground their lives. So that happened where I'm an associate priest at St. James in Kingston, Ontario. I put my email address up there on the train because I had a pile of handouts waiting by the door of my house in Kingston, where they still are. And so I put my in on the train, I just put my email address in case anybody's interested. I love talking about this and would love to continue dialoguing about children's ministry. I'd also love to email you my handouts. So it's V. Michelson, M-I-C-H-A-E-L-S-O-N at simpatico.ca, or you can hand me your email address at the end if you'd like to talk more. This journey began when I wanted the same spacious and gracious and sacrificial and deep story that I had experienced myself, and I wanted this for my children. Most of my ideas came out of my work at St. James Church, and I'm going to show you some things that we've been trying over the years, and we'll see what you think. I'm going to talk a lot about stories this afternoon. Because I truly believe that stories shape us, and stories tell us who we are, they define us. In whatever cultural context we're in, we're bombarded with stories from the time where we get Little Red Riding Hood, and we get McDonald's, and we get all kinds, we get our family stories. We are people who are inherently shaped by stories. There are cultures that have been wonderful that did not have the wheel, but no culture has not had stories. Stories are powerful things. Matthew tells us that one day Jesus told stories all afternoon, and his storytelling brought things out into the open that had been hidden since the world's first day. The question I always want to bring out is, what story will we choose to live in? What stories are we listening to? What stories are we telling our children? And which stories will we let shape our lives? My husband and I quickly realized that if we wanted our children to build their lives on God's story as revealed in Jesus, we needed to be highly proactive in thinking about the stories around us and in proactive in inviting our children to know God's story in the gospel in a way that permeated the whole of their lives. So I'm going to talk a lot about stories, and I'm going to hear from you. This is just a quick introduction. And I want to get us talking right away by thinking about what it's like to be a child in the world today. I don't want to fall into the trap of letting you think, I think culture is bad and church is good. Not at all. Church is shaped by culture as much as anything else, and culture, like anything, is a mixture of sin and redemption and glory and brokenness. But I do think there are aspects of contemporary culture that it's very important for us to think about as we think about children in the church. And it's important that we bring our good theological minds to just thinking, what do we want for our children? What is going to guide us on this journey? In some ways, this is the best time and place in the history of this planet to be a child. And in other ways, it's not. So we're going to dive right into this. Something I often do with the young people I work with is called think, pair, and share. We use this all the time. So I want you to just think for a minute. What is it like to be a child today in all the good and the bad and the beautiful and the ugly? Just thinking, I wonder if you have any ideas. And I'll give you maybe 40 seconds to turn to somebody beside you and just pair. What is it like to be a child today? Oh, I hate to do this. I love this buzzing. What is it like to be a child today? Ideas. Maybe I'll just go around the table and just tell me, did anything come out? And you can easily pass. Anything? What's it like? Overprogrammed. Excellent. Not excellent. Okay, anything? Safer than ever, probably. You can talk a lot about that. Over here? Okay, yeah. Back at Graham's table? Isolated with the breakdown of neighborhood, and isolation, I think, is a big theme. Here? Anything?
Fearful.
Okay, fearful? We're always hearing things that can go wrong, aren't we?
Curious,
another good one. Yeah, you guys?
Overly busy,
okay.
Very,
very much so. Antibiotics, right? Dental health. It's a great time for a child's health in that physical sense, isn't it?
Challenging?
Yep, very much so. Here?
They're empowered. Sometimes that's good, but sometimes they don't have to do it.
Yeah. That's a big one, and child's rights, and not necessarily child's responsibilities in there as well. Yeah, we could spend the whole time we have on each one of these. These are great. Anything here?
Mom and dad are always busy.
Mom and dad are always busy, yeah? Ryan's table? Yeah? Very, very much so. Very much so. You guys, anything you want to...
Bewildering.
So, I mean, childhood is just a huge topic we could talk about, and I think a topic we need to talk about as we think about ministry with children and to children in the church. We have education and child labor laws and medical care. It's a great time to be a child. But also, there's a lot of conversation about some things that make it quite complicated to be a child. I had a great bibliography for you, which I'm glad to email anyone. Just a few books that are in the forefront of my mind as a parent. Juliet Shore's book, Born to Buy, The Commercialized Child and the New Consumer Culture. Children are made to be consumers. They're ingrained to be consumers at a very early age. Unprecedented, the buying power that children have. Alone Together, Why We Expect More from Technology and Less from Each Other. Now, we know that technology is a mix of glory and brokenness as much as anything else. Huge, wonderful connection potential of technology, but also can be profoundly isolating for our children. So a powerful book, Alone Together. The Hurried Child. I heard this at many tables. The Detriment of Growing Up Too Fast, Too Soon, and clearly you guys have, many of you have noticed that as well. It is a pace that we keep for our children. And another book that has influenced me quite profoundly, Last Child in the Woods, Saving Our Children from the Nature Deficit Disorder. Very profound argument about how our disconnection from the natural world is detrimentally affecting child development, and a very, very strong focus on their spiritual development, which makes sense. We're told throughout the Bible narrative how the creative world points us to the Creator. And when we're disconnected from that created world, guess what? We're missing that way of being pointed to our Creator. We don't know that the heavens declare the glory of the Lord if we can't see the heavens. So, next. This is a cultural story. Now I want to think about children. What do our children need to flourish and thrive? What do children need? This time in your table groups, another 40 seconds. What do children inherently need? Brainstorm it. Good, glad you're joining in. Let's hear what children need. We'll start around here. I love hearing that buzz in the room, and I hate to cut you off. What do children need?
Enough structure so that they know that they're safe, but then also enough freedom so they can...
The paradox of structure and freedom. Beautiful. You guys, yeah, good job. I wish I'd had a flip chart. I'd be writing these up. Any other sense of what children need? Imagination, beautiful. Over here? Okay, good. Yeah. Oh, excellent. Oh, we are going to talk about that a ton in a little while. Here, thank you. Love, thank you. Anything here that you want to share? Freedom to explore, beautiful. It's free. Yes, they need to learn how to fail so they can grow deep roots and resilience. Always being told everything they've done is great is not going to help them, is it? We have got a hand up here. Pardon me? Yeah, exactly. A sacred environment. Thank you. Sacred environment? Oh, a safe environment. Yeah, very much so. And we want, as much as we want our kids to grow strong and take risks, we want to keep them safe, too. So appropriate risk and appropriate safety. They need faith. Beautiful. You guys know a lot about children. I guess the people who signed up for children's ministry would. back here, anything you want to share? Imagination. I've heard that a couple of times. Over here? Dreams. Yeah, they do. They do. Over here? Creativity, play. Okay, my whole workshop is being given, so we'll just have free time now. This is what children need. Over here. Adventure. Thank you.
I think it's adventure.
You guys clearly know a lot about children, and I sense a love for children. My own list that I was coming up with included things like meaningful adult relationships. That was covered. A connection with nature and with the Creator through that. Space and stillness in our fast-paced world. They need generosity and gratitude nurtured in them, not passive consumption. They need a deep and rich story that will root them and hold them and help them navigate all these stories that bombard us on every turn. Now, this is my favorite part of pretty much the whole presentation. What does the church have to offer our children. Okay, let's do this one all together now. We've done the pair, we've done the tables. What does the church have to offer our children? You can put up your hands or you can shout them out.
All of it.
The church has all of that that children need. Is that what you're saying? All the things we said. The safety, imagination, play, adventure. So church must be a pretty fabulous place if that's what we have to offer our children. Would you agree?
Yes.
Church has the potential to be a fabulous place. Yeah. But the potential is there. And if we can plant a seed this morning, one of my great heroes in faith is John Bowen. And John says, years and years ago, small can be a drop in a bucket, or it can be a seed. And what we want to do is plant seeds for sequoia trees or oak trees this morning, seeds that can grow big roots. So these small ideas can bring us big places. So thank you for that honesty. That was certainly my experience. When we brought our kids to church, we have triplets. We were so excited. We didn't grow up in the church, my husband and I. We said, oh, this is going to be great. And then we brought them and we thought, no, it's not. It's not. Church is going to be the worst part of their life if we don't do something. We were both priests, for goodness sake. We had to go to church. So, okay, I've lost my note. Other things the church has to offer our kids. Community, beautiful, yeah. Wonderful stories, yeah. A village, yeah. Village to raise the child.
Relationships,
yeah. Focus?
A purpose
for their life. A purpose worth living for, right? Ritual, and children are wired for ritual. You see it? Children never get tired of rituals. Have you ever seen a kid say, not birthday cake again. We're not going to sing that song again. Children love rituals. Rituals is innate to childhood. They just love rituals. And sometimes we think they don't, but I think we're wrong. Rituals are, you know what we do? The same things over and over give us so much comfort. And every time we do these family things over, it deepens us and deepens our roots. Last thing that the church has. Who wants to tell me the last thing? They can develop their passions, they can try out their gifts, they can have a chance to discover who they are in a loving, they can take risks within a loving community. This is great. I believe that the church is naturally equipped, both in the theology that grounds us and in the embodiment of who we're called to be. It has the gifts to offer our children that they most desperately, desperately need. There's no formula for this. There's no particular way it looks. No one-size-fits-all program. Do this and this will happen. But when we start to think about fresh expressions for the church's children, I hope we'll keep three things in mind. First, I want us to carefully discern with our biblical and theological minds the cultural stories around us. They're not good, they're not bad. They're not all good or bad. We need to just bring these theological tools to say, how can the things we know about the world around us inform the world our children are living in and how we can nurture them deeply in the Christian life? Also, I hope that we will take childhood seriously. All these wonderful things that we know children need, adventure and play and imagination and ritual and safety and adult community. Wow, let's keep that in mind when we think about what children need. And let the theology of the Bible and the natural gifts of the church in all its diversity of manifestations guide us, and let's claim who we are as we look at children. I truly believe that the church is potentially one of the richest places in our children's lives. What the church offers to our children, however, on a typical Sunday morning in whatever our context. Oh, okay, that was supposed to be, the church is potentially one of the richest places, but often we get this. We get something that looks suspiciously more like the consumption-oriented culture around us than the sacrificial, life-transforming gospel of Jesus, with the best of intentions, because we don't want to lose our children. We want them to be excited about coming to church. We can quite easily teach them to be passive consumers, because kids like this kind of thing, don't they? We buy into the lowest common denominator in order to try to reach our kids, because we think, oh, kids like Chuck E. Cheese. Maybe church should look like that. That's not what they need. The way we teach our children about God and the very media that we use are often in contradiction to the story itself that Jesus gives us. And when we are offered, when what we are offered is this life-transforming, sacrificial, and countercultural story of Jesus, who participated with God from the creation of the world, why would we settle for this? I believe there's another way, and I'm very excited about what Fresh Expressions of Church for Children might look. This is the first time I've been in a Fresh Expressions context, so I'm feeling a little bit stretched out of my element. But I'm excited about what you've already discovered today that might apply to children's ministry and what might we might imagine together. So we're going to reimagine church now. Some fresh expressions of the church for 21st century children. I always know if I don't get right into it, I'm going to waste a lot of time at the beginning and not get started, so I dove right in. But I would love to know, I guess we can't all introduce ourselves. I'm thrilled to see so many of you. Deep hopes, things that we'll talk about this morning. Anybody want to, in this afternoon, in this time we have, themes that you're really hoping, because I've got a lot of things, and I can stretch and expand on the most important things and go over quickly some others.
You actually touched on what I was interested in.
Okay.
We're doing messy church. And
okay.
It's fun and it's exciting, but how, and we have the liturgy, but how do we create that? What you did at the very beginning.
Okay. Okay, excellent. Because we need both, too. I mean, we need a whole bunch of things.
I don't want to make it sound like that stuff is boring, because I don't see that stuff as boring at all. But
no. Okay, we're going to do some of that. We're going to make sure we get to that part. Yeah.
How to make the stories in Scripture more meaningful and relevant to children.
Okay. Beautiful. Thank you for that. So stories and stillness. Okay, integration. Okay, thank you, Miranda. Uh-oh. Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, thank you for that. And I hadn't prepared anything on that, but I think it's one of the most important things that we do in the church is help our parents. So next year, Ryan, we'll come back, because we need to talk about, that's one of the most important things we need to talk about, and I'll try throughout to say a few things about that. We've tried to send home things, because church often, in my context, 2 hours a week, right? Like, what can we do? And so some of the tools that I'm going to show you this morning are things we've tried to teach to our parents and bring into family life, and we've heard that the children have started doing, I mean, we've been doing this for about 10 years now, that the children are doing them at home. But this is that's a huge conversation and one of the most important. And I'm afraid I don't have slides for it, but we'll try to bring that in.
There is a website in the UK called Faith in Homes.
Yeah.
That is all about connecting what's happening with church programs and stuff at church with the homes. So if somebody
okay.
has a website, I'll just
take a look. Excellent. Thank you very much for that. Yeah. Well, and that's a huge one. And that's a really huge one. And I have three kind of teenagers now. So I get that. And I get the depth of that question, because I think those media, often media can be very, very destructive and also very, very useful. So we need to really be critically discerning. And I would say that we're in new ground, and our children are navigating a world that we never had to navigate with the internet and Facebook and social media and texting and video games. And they need our help because it is scary ground. It's like they've been sent to explore a whole new country. And they need us to help them figure out what the joys and beauties are and what the pitfalls are. And they're insidious. So thank you for that. We'll try to touch on that. I'm going to stop asking for ideas, or I'm going to get really overwhelmed with what I am not going to talk about. but I am so delighted to email and dialogue more about this. Four things that I chose for this morning that I believe the church is naturally gifted to give to our children that meets their deepest needs. I chose four things. Guessing what you might say was important, and I was bang on a couple and missed a couple. But I could have chose from 50 things. So I just thought better to go deeply into a few than not really talk about anything. So this is what I thought we'd talk about. Our children need a story to live in. They need meaningful intergenerational connections. They need a faith that takes seriously our bodies and our embodiment, because kids are in their bodies. They don't live in their heads, they're in their bodies. And they need quiet and stillness in our fast-paced world. So those are the four things we're going to talk about. And at the end, during questions, we can flesh out some of these other things, like the technology and the video games and the parenting and stuff like that. So first, stories. Let's talk about stories for a couple of minutes. I love stories. I've always loved stories. Stories are essential to helping us know who we are in the world and to helping us make sense out of our lives. Lots of early childhood experts tell us that for children, meaning is built into stories. Children use narratives to make sense out of the world, and this is innate to childhood. I believe that the gospel is a story from Genesis to Revelation that truly not only makes sense out of our lives, but that draws us into that story. And this gospel story stretches back through creation and ahead to the recreation of all things in Jesus. And when we find ourselves inside this story, we wake up to this deep truth. That this isn't just a book of rules or something that happened a long time ago. We are active participants with Jesus in what God is doing now in the world. And I think our goal of storying children, of giving our children the Bible story, is to draw them in, is to invite them into it, is to help them find their own lives in it. Now, I'm going to say something maybe a little bit controversial. About 10 years ago, my church, St. James, got fed up with curriculum. We found a marvelous book called the Jesus Storybook Bible. Is anybody familiar with this? It is undoubtedly the best children's Bible out there, isn't it? No bias there. I love this. We had curriculum after curriculum. I was saying this to Miranda earlier. Some of the people who had written some of it, they knew a lot about God, but not much about kids. Some of them knew a lot about kids, but there was not much about God. Some of them just had such finicky crafts that none of us could do it. And anyway, we didn't like crafts, and the kids didn't, I don't know. It wasn't working. Since I've discovered that there are some marvelous curriculum out there, and more power to you if you found one that's going well, keep using it. Let it work for you. But we could not find a curriculum that worked. And we said, what do we really want? We really want a story. And so we made a very collective decision to toss the curriculum and use the Bible as a curriculum. Curriculum means to run along, or the course that we were going to follow. And we divided the Bible into a 3-year lectionary. Sound familiar? And our children start in Genesis in September and work through Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. And then we do some Advent stories, and then we focus on the New Testament and stories of Jesus, through to Lent stories, and then Easter resurrection stories, and then Pentecost and the early church and the stories of shipwrecks and adventures and prison breaks, and our kids love this. And then we start again the next year in what we call year B, and we're with Moses in the desert, and we follow that story, and then Christmas and Easter, and we follow the church year so that within 3 years, you've gone through the whole Bible story, and then guess what we do? We do it again, and we do it again, and we spiral down. So if you're a kid in our children's ministry, you start this at about 3, and by the time you're 10 or 11, and you're developmentally waking up for abstract thinking, you know the story, and we're building on it, because we never give our children abstract thinking, because that's not where they are developmentally. We tell them the stories again and again and again, and we invite them in. And what we found in our kind of very unscientific experiment is that when we have built this storied foundation, when we start to teach these guys Paul, they know the story and they stand on it, and everything else starts to make a lot more sense. We didn't know that was going to happen, so that was pretty exciting. The Bible stories take place in particular places and time, just like us, particular places and time, still living in God's story. So we start by asking, what happened in this story? But that's only the beginning. We don't want to leave our children in questions of what happened, what does it mean, and how do we behave. We want them to ask, how can I get in on it? What is my role to play? So I've got lots of things we can say here. But if bringing the gospel story to life and inviting our children into it is our theological principle, and I heard lots of people excited about stories, I wonder what some pedagogical ways of bringing our kids into this would be. So I'm going to do a little experiment with you. I've never done this before in a group, so we're going to give it a try. Because I didn't want to manufacture something that I had all prepared. Can we just choose together a Bible story? Any Bible story?
Jonah.
Jonah. Is that okay? Okay. Jonah. Here we go. So how are we going to invite our children into this story? What are we going to do?
Jonah said no to God.
Okay. Yeah? Okay. Yep, we're going to let them talk about saying no. Great. Yeah? Yeah?
Uh-huh.
I'm going to show you, sorry, what is your name?
Kim.
I'm going to show you one of my favorite props. We have at our church fabric. We have all colors. I just grabbed this one because I can't remember. It was there by the where we'd been using it on Sunday for something. This is anything. We have blue, red, pink, gold, brown. Sometimes it's the Red Sea. Sometimes it's Jesus calming the storm. It was a boat this last week. But right now, it is going to be a whale. We want our kids to have this experience. This is great because it's about a dollar a meter. And we had somebody eventually build us stands that are pretty big. There's a sample of what we use, a stand like this. And so we're going to build ourselves a whale. Last week, this was a boat, but now it's a whale, and I've got these clips, $8 a pair. Have you ever been with kids and a bunch of blankets on a rainy day, and you just build forts around the whole house? Yeah, this never gets old. Just about every Bible story that we do, we build a prop. So here we are. We have our whale. So Kim, how are we going to let them know what it's like to be in a whale for 3 days? Yeah, they are definitely going in there. Yeah. You could have a bowl, that is brilliant, a bowl of cold spaghetti in there. Yeah? You know what? Sardines would be the perfect snack for the Jonah lesson. And if you smell all fishy in there, thank you. Next time Jonah comes up, our children are going to be indebted to that idea. So they're in there. They're having maybe their snack. They're all kind of, maybe we're telling the story in the whale. I don't know. What else are we going to do?
I would put on boots and a raincoat.
Aha. Okay. Great. As you're telling the story or as...
Put on some.
Excellent. What's that? You can turn out the lights. We're gonna create this space, right? Your imagination's kind of getting there. The great thing about these play stands is that they demand a lot of us. Let me give you an example. Did you ever have a play kitchen to play with? Or a play car? What do you do with a play kitchen? You cook. Yeah. Did you ever have a cardboard box? So what is a cardboard box? It's a spaceship, it's an alligator, it's a whale, it's a kitchen, it's anything. And because your imaginations are engaged, so it demands a lot from you. So when we have this whale, they're suddenly drawn in their imagination, right? Because we're not telling them what it is. We also have a bunch of capes that we use, and our children are used to this now, and they'll take a cape and they'll say, oh, I'm going to be a fish. And they'll take the yellow one and I'm a goldfish or I'm a this or that. And because it can be anything, it's everything. If I gave them a bunch of fish costumes, they'd say, oh, we're fish. If I give them something with unlimited scope for the imagination, they are there. I've seen this again and again and again and again with every Bible story, so many stories I could tell you. We built a road, Jesus going up for Palm Sunday, and we were going to be waving palm branches, right? And the donkey, nobody wanted to be a donkey. Nobody wanted to be Jesus. Guess what they wanted to be? Stones. They put on the capes, and they were stones, and they were crying out in praise. Only a child would think of something so wonderful. But here we are at Jonah. What else are we going to do? Anybody have coloring sheets in their Sunday school, children's church? What do you think of them? Who said that? What do you think of coloring sheets? Yeah, me too. But they're not anathema. There's a time and a place. What I always encourage my leaders, if you need to color, that's okay. A blank piece of paper is great, right? Because you're not just coloring Jesus, you're in it. But I always say, if you really need a coloring sheet, don't just let it be a distant exercise. Tell the kid, you can color that, but you got to put yourself in it. Where are you in this story? And so maybe there's a picture of Jonah and the whale. Are you in there with Jonah? Are you a fish? Are you the whale? Because when we let our children play the heroes in the Bible stories, Jonah going to Nineveh, being triumphant, whatever, David slaying Goliath, we are showing them how to be courageous and God's heroes. But what we want to do is find our whole lives in these stories. We want them to know that we want them to experience the whole gamut of archetypes, running away from God, feeling afraid, being brave, saying, no, don't send me. We want to give them the whole breadth of human experience, which is found in the Bible. So if they want to be a bystander and a fish, let them explore that. Let them come into that. We have a bunch of questions that were developed by Jerome Berryman that I had on one of my wonderful handouts. We use with almost every Bible story. In our church, you hardly have to do any prep. You've got all these supplies, you've got the story, you've got the children's imaginations, and the wondering questions go like this. We just sit around reflecting. We always have a candle, always have a little glockenspiel. Maybe we're in the whale asking these. I wonder who you would be in this story. And we just let it sit, and we wonder. I wonder if there's a part you didn't like. Let's just be honest. There are parts of these stories we don't like. I wonder what part you liked best. I wonder what happens next. So we wonder together. Perfect training. As the kids who have gone through this, we've now seen, are really good at theological reflection as they're older, because we've been doing it with them since they were three. I wonder. Sometimes we play a game just to test the facts. We have a who, what, where, when, why, how dice that the kids love, so we just kind of toss it. So here we go. And they can ask each other questions. I can ask them questions. Who swallowed Jonah? Who was going to Nineveh? What? Just to kind of get us started engaging the story. They love tossing this thing around. We have another one for the older children that says church, Jesus, community, prayer, Father, Son, Spirit, something like that. And we get to sit, we throw the dice and we say, what is this story? How does this story help us understand the church? Sometimes we just laugh and say, I don't know. But sometimes it does. And so these tools, they're just tools. They push us into the story. And the Holy Spirit draws us into the story. And then we find ourselves in the story. And these are all open-ended things. We just play. We play imagination. All the things I heard about what children need are what the church has to offer. Somebody asked about story and how we can wake our kids up to stories. Does this give you any ideas? Anything that you could say, we could try that. I wonder. Anyone want to make any comments? Because I want to get through the four things. I'm going to move on in a second. Anything you want to say about stories? Yeah, kids do use technology a lot. With the older kids in our church, to be honest, I have some just personal strong feelings about young children using technology. I really think the early childhood years we need to protect from that, just developmentally. But our kind of 10, 12-year-olds, we would let them do a claymation or something, and we'd video it, and there's lots of good ways to use technology for these stories, definitely. Although I have to say, the older kids in the cardboard boxes, it's amazing how quickly they go into it. And oh my goodness, I tell you lots of stories. We've had some great times just living in the stories with the older kids, and it's been pretty magical. So thank you for that. Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Thank you for that. So I'll give you a quick answer for that now, and then I'm glad to talk to you about more about that. So can you give me an age? Okay. So one thing which is, you know, that we can learn from developmental psychologists, right, is a young child age 7, they don't live in their heads mostly. Right? That's just not where they are. So an adult answer is not what is going to meet a child's deep longings. So I wonder what that question is about. I wonder where they've learned that question. And as raising my own kids, I know they learn adult questions, and they try them on. It's often not what they were asking them. I don't know that we can give a factual academic argument to a child, but we can invite them into the story. We can live with them in community. We can be with them, and it's a process, right? It's not a, oh, God is real because of this. Oh, thank you. Now we'll just go and join in the church. You know, that's not how it works for most of us. And we have stories, the Ethiopian eunuch, you know. Those are very adult stories about the mind, being changed, and God can work that way. But we're thinking about children and letting them be children. I don't think these abstract answers are what they're looking for. I think they're looking to be held in a community of love. And we've got a long time, right? If we see our program rising and falling on 1 week and one lesson, that is very stressful. But if we see this as a lifetime journey, then we start to think, okay, how can we as a church family walk with these children and nurture them into a life of faith and give them time to really live in these deep questions? And eventually, maybe they're going to live into the answers, but that's not our timeline. Okay, so I just leave that question now, and I'm glad to talk to you about that more. We're going to move on from stories. John, welcome. I quoted you as I was talking about stories. You missed it. But it was a good quote. I do believe that the story of Scripture gives us this framework for living our lives. And however we're going to think about inviting our children into it, whatever new ideas we're going to dream up, let's let this story root us. The second thing, how are we doing for time? 5 to 2? What time do we end? 20 minutes? Okay. We're going to pick up the pace here. We're going to actually skip something. Okay. Often, I do a little trick. I look at that. I have something in a little box and say, what is one of the best gifts the church has? And at the end of the day, you find out it's actually a piece of my graying hair. We live in a world that often segments by age and interest group, and actually, I think this intergenerational community is an endangered species and one of the best things the church has going. There's a wonderful story of Jesus going to the temple as a boy with his family up to Jerusalem. His family goes home, Mary and Joseph and the whole extended clan, they go home, and the Bible story, when I noticed this, just blew me away. They're gone, right? And they're going from Jerusalem back to Nazareth. That's the distance from Kingston to Brockville. I don't know if that means anything to you, Kingston to Brockville, but it does to me. And it says, the next day, Mary and Joseph notice that Jesus wasn't with them. So in my cultural context, that's a quick call to social services. You have these parents who walk halfway from Kingston to Brockville and they don't know their kid is missing. What are these guys thinking? And I tell you this, not to draw into question the parenting strategies of Mary and Joseph, but to point out that they were held in such a web of community that they knew their kid was okay. And that is my dream of what the church can be. Now, it all worked out okay. He went back to the temple and he was there and they found him. It was all good. But imagine if the church could be that sort of deep web that held our young people in all the complexities of their lives, our young people who are growing up in this fast-paced, overstimulating consumerist culture. They need us, and they need this gift of being held in God's family. Studies show that predictors of which children will grow into mature Christian adulthood, not how often they attend youth programs, not how often they go to Canada's Wonderland Day at youth group or whatever it's going to be, but if they're raised in a family that modeled Christian adulthood or connected with adults in a church community so strongly that they became like an extended family. Whatever our church context is, we would do well to keep this in mind. That the isolation of young people from the adult world is not helpful to our young people. And that is the society that we live in that isolates them. Can you imagine teaching your kid to drive? And letting them learn what they need to learn about driving from their peers or the internet. And yet, we want them to know safety. We want them to intuitively pick them up. We want to sit beside them with kind of our, you know, on our own side with our foot on the imaginary brake. We do this with our faith, which has more potential for all kinds of things than driving. This is way more important than driving. we isolate our children, and we often let them learn what they need to learn from their peers or their internet or the internet. And they need us to be with them, walking with them, modeling this. One of the best books out there about youth ministry, I think, is Mark DeVries' Family-Based Youth Ministry. He says, teens will not learn the skills required of mature adults by talking with their friends. The process occurs as the less mature repeatedly have the opportunity to observe, dialogue, and collaborate with the more mature. By denying our young people opportunities for this kind of involvement with adults, our culture sends youth into the adult years relationally, mentally, morally, and spiritually unprepared for the challenges of adults. That is deep, deep truth. And I think that the church can meet this need and this longing in our young people in a profound way just by very simply tapping into the natural resources of who we are. How could we nurture intergenerational connections in the church? In your church. Maybe this happens. Yeah, Graham. Beautiful. Beautiful.
It's interesting. We're just looking at something now. We have a lot of kids in our church who are dropped off.
Okay.
Parents go and they drop kids off. And we're finding out the acoustics in our church are amazing, but the curse is you can hear kids too.
Yeah. That is win-win. That is a beautiful model. That's win-win for everybody. Yeah?
Having adults and kids serve together on some sort of project.
Service together. Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Duke? Brilliant. I encourage you that these things are life-changing to our kids. They're not just fun things we do. These things change lives. I know because I've experienced it, and I've seen my kids experience it. And the church can do this. Yeah? Families doing things together. Yeah. Beautiful. Get them all involved. Get the children involved in something that means something in the church, not just the kids' jobs and the adults' jobs, but give them something that means something. You had your hand up here.
Similar to the other idea of pairing up older seniors with younger children, a buddy phone system.
Okay.
Especially when some of the seniors are not able to attend, they get the connections through the phone.
Beautiful. Yeah, these are great ideas. Yeah. 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 I don't think we can do enough of these things. Thank you for that. John? Yep. Yep. And unconventional family structures, right? Because we've got lots of those in the church. Okay, we're going to have just a couple more, and then I'm going to, because I think we have only about 10 minutes left. So go ahead. Wow, beautiful. Yeah?
And it's a remembrance day. The children in our college are called kids because Sunday school has a connotation that we made copies of the act of remembrance.
Nice.
And we have something like 45 or 50 veterans
Wonderful. Wonderful. Yeah, I don't think we can do enough of these intergenerational things. I'm going to race through a couple more things, and I'm going to just would love to keep talking about this all morning, but I want to respect your time. I was going to do quite a big thing that I like to talk about how our physical bodies are so important. This deep theology that in the incarnation, we realize we're not saved from the physical world, but we're saved for the physical world. So our physicality is a vital part of what we bring to our faith and what we bring to our church experience. And that's where I think Fresh Expressions has a lot of potential. Because often in the traditional church, I know when, those early years when I was bringing my kids, it was like, be quiet and don't make any noise and don't bother people. And that's not honoring childhood any more than it's in honoring this story. And David knew that, I think, more than just about anybody and all this wild dancing and... But I'm going to skip through this because the Fresh Expressions is skateboarding idea. I think that's just a brilliant for lots of reasons. But what I wanted to focus on is it honors the body, that we're physical people. So let's not leave our bodies out of this. It's not just don't have sex and don't drink. Our bodies are part of this story, so let's be embodied. I had a lot to say there, which I am not going to say, because I want to talk about taking childhood seriously. And I think being loud in our culture comes more easily to us than being quiet. And so we've spent quite a bit of time exploring what it means to be wild and loud, and we do that very well in our church. But we've also tried to say, how can we meet that deep need to be still? So I want to show you some things we've come up with. We see Jesus coming, bringing the children to him. And what I want you to mull over is, how seriously are we willing to take children? Are we open that God might reveal something to children that we've never thought of? Do we trust in the power of the imagination of children and that Jesus can reveal something new to them about himself that the adult world might have more trouble seeing? One of my favorite writers on children's spirituality is Sophia Cavaletti, and she spends a lot of time unpacking the story of the Good Shepherd. We know about the story of the Good Shepherd. The Good Shepherd keeps you safe, gives you food, brings you to water. But this is what the children know, that the Good Shepherd will take you out to see the stars at night. And the Good Shepherd knows the best hills for you to roll in, where the best muddy pool is. These are the kind of things that kids know about the Good Shepherd that the adult world doesn't have access to without the help of children. Rather than try to drag our children into the adult world, do we trust enough that Jesus meant this, that we need to become like children? And recognize that when we come into the adult world with room for imagination and the Bible stories and the Holy Spirit, something magical might happen. I've challenged this fast-paced of modern culture. And how would we constructively address that? And the reason I skipped over to this is because somebody asked about this at the beginning. There's so much noise, and we need to find that deep, quiet place in ourselves. So this is what we did. We developed something to address this fast pace, because this stillness is essential to developing a deep spiritual life. How will we ever learn to be still and know that I am God if we never learn to be still? So this is something we would do with a group, I kid you not, of 3, 4, 5-year-old rowdy boys. And it meets them in the deepest of places. And this has transformed the way I think about children's ministry. We've been doing this for years now. Sometimes we challenge ourselves and they're so rangy, we say, let's try it today and see if it works. It always does. This is called the Silent Game. It was developed by Maria Montessori, and we've adapted it for our own purposes. So I wonder if you can hear the noises around you outside. I wonder if you can hear the noises in this room. wonder if you can hear your own breathing. If you put your hand on your heart, you should be able to hear your heartbeat. I'll help them if they can't find it. I wonder if you can hear that. Sometimes God speaks to us in a quiet whisper. I wonder if you can hear the quiet voice of God. And we have found again and again and again that this transforms the children. We might bring them out of it. But our parents, could parents come to us after and say, "What did you do? He's so calm." We didn't tell them to behave. We invited them to find that inner place of stillness. If they can find that space, it will help them at school. It will help them when they're taking tests. It will help them when they pray. It will help them as adults. When they're sad, when they're lonely, when they're stressed, it will root them in a spiritual tradition that we can claim as our own, and it will help them learn that still voice of God. I hope you will try that. And I love playing that. Can somebody give me a time check? Because I'm going to make a quick decision about what we're going to do.
5 minutes.
All right. All right. We're going to end then. Okay. We're going to end. Final comments, and I'm going to whip you through my last thought. A final comment on the silent game. Can you just imagine trying that? You're using it? Anybody have kids? Try it at bedtime. See, what we do is we build prayer huts like this, and we invite the kids into them, and I swear they don't want to come out. They go into this, they say, no, we say, okay, snacks ready, guys. We do our little glockenspiel. No, I'm in here with Jesus, they say. Like, what are you going to do? It's just so beautiful. And we call them the prayer houses. We were inspired by a Jewish holiday that builds prayer houses, and we thought we're going to try that. And we use our same props, our chairs and our clothespins and boxes, and it's pretty special. Being noisy with kids in church is beautiful. And being still with kids in church are beautiful, and they're both our gifts. Oh, it's not how this or that, it's however it goes. And different things work in different contexts, right? And so I would say if it works, that's how you do it, and if it doesn't work, you try something else. It's kind of our rule of thumb. Last thought on that, because I'm going to just give you my final couple of thoughts, and then we can... Okay, here we go. I want to leave you with an encouraging thought as we look for fresh expressions for the church's children. I love it that these artists give us so many fresh expressions of church, and they inspire me a lot. We are not starting from scratch. As we come together in the 21st century, we are building on 2,000 years of God's people in the church thinking, how do we nurture our children in the Christian life? Our fresh expressions need to be guided by good theology. And before we think about what is new, we do well to remember what is old. The church has been thinking about children across centuries and across every culture. I encourage you to resist the simplistic arguments that church is good, culture is bad, or to resist the simplistic thinking that new is good and old is bad. We can't go either of those places, but we need to bring our good biblical minds and imaginations and understanding of childhood and discern the way forward. And it's going to look different in different places. That's okay. The Bible, through the Holy Spirit, helps us be discerning about the church around us, both in the world and in the church, helps us discern our deep traditions and our freshest ideas, so that We can make wise and godly decisions in how we nurture our children in the Christian life. And I believe with every part of who I am that the church, through the power of the living God, is uniquely gifted to offer our children what they need most to flourish and thrive. Some of those things: meaningful intergenerational community, deep respect for stillness and depth in our fast-paced, often shallow world, the prayers of the community, opportunity for service, gratitude, play, creativity, imagination, and God's story that draws us in and anchors our lives. This is no coincidence. God set it up this way so that through the church, his children might be invited into the life that he's promised us in Jesus. So after you leave this conference, wherever your fresh expression leads your imagination, I pray that it will hold together the things that we've talked about this morning. A careful biblical discernment about the glory and brokenness of the world around us, an honoring of children and childhood, a love of the gospel story that God draws us into, and the way that the natural gifts of the church can meet our children in their deepest longings and in the deepest places of their hearts. And I believe that we can do that. And I believe that's what the church is. So I thank you. I think our time is up, but I'm glad to talk more. Thank you. Thank you very much.